Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Thursday, September 9th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's listening, joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that webpage and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file download. Print it off. Use it as often as you'd like. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through the worksheet process and or they've called in with powerful testimonials about how the application of those tools, active application of those tools in their life has improved their quality of life. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you download that, it'll give you access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope people do that soon and often because it quite frequently leads to questions or comments or testimonials. And if you have that, give us a call at 563-999-3581 and press 1, or send us an email, jeannie@whyagain.org, or you can send an email to me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, and we will address your comments or questions in the show, and you can listen to them through the archives. We're also doing the Course in Miracles lessons this year. In the workbook lesson, today is the 252nd day of the year. The title of the lesson is, The Offspring of Creation is My Identity. My true higher self is holy beyond all the thoughts of holiness of which I now conceive. My true higher self has a shimmering and perfect purity that is far more brilliant than any light I have ever looked upon. Its love is limitless with an intensity that holds all things in it, in the calm of quiet certainty. Its strength comes not from burning impulses which move the world, but from the boundless love of the Creator. And how far beyond this world my true self must be, and yet how near to me and how close to the creation itself. Creator, you know my true identity. Reveal it to me, I who are your offspring, and so that I may awaken to the truth in you and know that heaven is restored in me. And the Course in Miracles experiment, lesson 252 from Pam Grout. She titles lesson 252, 76 Trombones in the Thought Parade. And she quotes Pico Iyer, who said, "The mind places footnotes and second thoughts where once there was simply radiance. Our mind places footnotes and second thoughts and qualifications where once there was simply radiance." Pam writes, "Words, language, and thoughts are my stock in trade. To admit they're mostly irrelevant might just put me out of a job. Lesson 252 calls them burning impulses which move the world. It reminds me that words and thoughts are pawns of the ego, deliberately used to muck up the radiance. Today, I want the radiance. Today, I want the limitless love. I remind myself every hour that my thoughts are electrical impulses. No need to underline them with yellow highlighter. No need to endlessly wallow or examine or take them seriously. Today, I watch my parade of thoughts from the sidelines, recognizing they're only electrical impulses, and I wave fondly to them as they march on by." So that is our Course in Miracles workbook lesson for today and the Pam Grout commentary from Course in Miracles Experiment. And we have, as usual, about 50 minutes to entertain your comments or questions. Discuss something you might have heard on the show yesterday, where there was quite a bit of monologue, and then near the end of the show, there was some processing with one individual in particular, which carried over into Michael's show. So our call-in number is 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1, and we can have a conversation. Today is a Thursday, which means there'll be a support group tonight available through the Internet on Zoom for anybody who's interested. It's free. Information about how to join us will be available on the website at mindshiftersacademy.org. And my mind just went blank. I was going to add something beyond that. Tomorrow, I will be playing an interview that I did earlier this year with Dr. Andrew Pleaner. He is an integrative psychiatrist out of Florida, and he is the clinical director for the Mental Health Psychiatric Psychological aspect or factor from the sameheerglobal.org website. All one word, SAMEHERE global, GLOBAL.org. And so that'll be available in the archives after tomorrow. I will be here in the morning to read the Course in Miracles lesson and intro that interview and then let it go. It's about a 40-minute talk. And I recommend it. I have been trying to curate out some of the more, I think, interesting and useful interviews I've done from Journey's Dream throughout the past year and a half and try to make those available to the Mind Shifters radio audience. And tomorrow there's just enough going on in my schedule that I thought it would be better for me to take a 40-minute break. I'm scheduling another interview and patients. And so I will be here for the beginning of the show and intro that work, and then share that interview with you. So if you're interested in that, or you know somebody who would be interested in listening to a very bright integrative psychiatrist talk about his work and the work of Same Here Global and how that all got started and what it's trying to accomplish, tune in tomorrow or tune into the archives after tomorrow and share that with anybody you think might be interested. It's a fascinating story to my eye and ear that the founder of Same Here Global was a very successful gentleman who had a lot of stress, and instead of anybody addressing the stress, they looked for physical problems that might be causing his physical symptoms and found nothing, and you know, pursued that process for years until finally somebody said, oh, it's all in your head here. Here's five medications. Take these and go home and don't bother us anymore. And that's a slight exaggeration, but the idea that it was five medications is not an exaggeration. And he was devastated by that. What you might call a bit of news or prognosis. And it wasn't until after all of that occurred that he found himself in the office with an integrative therapist who started asking him about the stresses in his life and his childhood and his traumas, and taught him some breathing techniques, and his life turned around. And he started working with some integrative treatment specialists, and with the hope that came from turning his life around, he began to put together this website, sameheareglobal.org, to try and help others who might find themselves in a similar situation. So that'll be tomorrow's show. And for today's show, we have plenty of time to talk. What's on your mind? 563-999-3581 and press 1. Any comments or questions about what you might have heard on the show yesterday or the processing that was done at the end of our show and moving into the second hour with Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice. I had occasion in a last session to talk to somebody about this comfort in my own skin. This is the this is one of the ways I talk to people about this most often is, health is one thing, relative health. In our culture, we talk about health, and basically what we're talking about is the absence of any obvious physical dis-ease. And yet, if you talk to a functional medicine specialist or an integrative medical specialist, that's not their definition for health. And they will be talking to you about some level of optimal health and well-being and energy level, et cetera. And when I talk to people about that in the context of the psychology and the relationships of one person to another, I frequently talk about being comfortable in one's own skin. And the more comfortable I can be in my own skin, the more likely I am going to connect with, be attracted to, and be attractive to other people who are comfortable with themselves. And that's the recipe for a more rewarding life and for healthy relationships. Many people have a discomfort within themselves. They're not so comfortable in their own skin, and they think the answer to that discomfort or displeasure is a relationship. And what they find over and over and over again is it doesn't work. I can't be uncomfortable in my own skin and reach out to another person for a healthy relationship and expect the relationship to be healthy when I don't even like myself? How could I expect that somebody else is going to like me when I don't even like myself? And most of the time, they don't, and that's what happens. That's the root of, you know, the discomfort in most relationships is not that my partner's unhappy with me, but in truth, I'm running from my own unhappiness, my own displeasure with myself, my own negative judgments, my own belief that I'm not lovable. And if as long as I run from that, I drag it with me everywhere I go, and it becomes the baggage that drives my perception and therefore drives my interaction and relationship and produces the unpleasant results that I'm going to the therapist to help me get rid of. And it doesn't usually work. The therapist doesn't have a magic wand, although many of us wish that he or she did. And so what's the solution? The solution is to remove the things within me that make me dissatisfied with myself, the things within me that leave me operating from a belief, a negative belief, and therefore we know it's false, that I'm unlovable, I'm damaged, I'm broken, etc. And we have tools for that. We have the Reality Management Worksheet. We have the 3 Early Memories of Conflict. We have the targeted journaling that Michael calls the Mind Shifter. We have the Mind Goal Management Sheet. Every one of these is available absolutely free on the website, whyagain.org. And click on the Start Here link. When you get to that page, just start scrolling down and you'll see all of these worksheets listed. Why would I want to do that? Why would I want to do this work? Well, because it's the work I do that puts me into a different type of experience that let's say it helps me usher myself into a new type of an experience. And it's the experience that we should be going for. You know, one of the benefits of being in a community like this and having this internet show is that when we start talking about this stuff, other people are out there reading their own things and then they hit something that they think I might like and they send it to me. And Susan Bingham sent me this thing this morning that's from Richard Rohr. Richard Rohr has the Center for Action and Contemplation. And if you sign up for it, they'll send you a daily meditation. And so today's meditation is titled Participatory Morality. And this is exactly the kind of thing that we get if you tap into Dr. Michael Rice or Dale Allen Hoffman or Guy Finley or JM, they're talking about having an experience, working with your breath, working with the tools, changing what the beliefs and your experience of yourself from the inside out. So you become a practitioner of whatever works for you. And this, apparently there's a category that this article is under, and the category is titled Life as Participation. And Richard writes, Jesus' message of, quote, full and final participation, close quotes, was periodically enjoyed and taught by many unknown saints and mystics. It must be admitted, though, that the vast majority of Christians turned Christianity into a set of morals and rituals instead of the all-embracing mysticism of the present moment. Moralism, as opposed to the concept of healthy morality, moralism is the reliance on largely arbitrary purity codes, needed rituals, and dutiful requirements that are framed as the prerequisites for enlightenment. Every group of people, an individual, usually begins this way. I guess it's understandable. People look for something visible, something that's seemingly demanding and socially affirming to either do or not do. And they look for that instead of undergoing a radical transformation that will assist them in touching the heart of the Creator, the heart of God. It is no wonder that Jesus so strongly warned against public prayer, public acts of generosity, and visible fasting when he talked on his Sermon on the Mount. That you can find that from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 6, verses 1 through 18. So Jesus warned against it, and yet that's what most people in religion do, and they say they're doing it in his name. Richard goes on to say, any external behavior that puts us on high moral ground is always attractive to the ego, because, as Jesus would say, you've already received your reward. Moralism and ritualism allow us to think that we are independently good without needing the love and mercy of the Creator and without being of service to or really deeply engaging in anybody else or with anybody else. And the truth is, that's a far cry from the full and final participation that we see the teachings of Jesus or Yeshua offering. So we have this carrot and stick approach to religion, and it reveals the fact that one is never quite pure enough, holy enough, or loyal enough for the presiding group. Obedience is normally a higher virtue than love in most religious circles. This process of managing my sins has kept us clergy, he's a priest himself, has kept the clergy in business. He says, hiding around the edges of this search for moral purity are the evils that we've readily overlooked. And then he lists a whole bunch of evils, everything from slavery to exclusion of LGBTQIA people and the destructive of native cultures. He writes, almost all wars were fought with the full blessing of religions, Christians and others. We have, as a result, what some cynically call, quote, churchianity, close quotes, or, quote, civil religion, close quotes. We have that in place of deep, transformative Christianity, or the teachings of a man named Yeshua. The good news of an incarnational religion, which is a spirit-based morality, is that once you do that work, you're not motivated by any outside reward or punishment. You're motivated by the participating in the mystery, capital M mystery, of life itself. Carrots are neither needed nor helpful, for it is the Creator who, for Creator's own loving purpose, puts both the will and the action into you. That's me changing a few words from a quote in Philippians chapter 2, verse 13. It's not mere rule-following behavior Rather, it is our actual identity in creation, in God, in life, that is radically changing us. Henceforth, we do things because these things are true and loving, not because we have to do them or because we're afraid of punishment. Now, we're not so much driven from without, which is the false self method, but we are drawn from within, which he calls the capital T, true, capital S, self method. The generating motor is inside of us now instead of either a lure or a threat from outside of us. This alone is converted Christian or converted anything. This is the true spirituality. This is doing the work to remove everything that's less than love, remove everything that has constriction, resistance, anger, fear, sadness, hurt, guilt, shame, bitterness, resentment, any of those negative emotional states. Remove that energy from my system, and what is there for ready access is this beyond words radiant energy of creation expressing in form in this moment. And that's the goal of work, whether it's Byron Katie's work or Michael Rice's work or Guy Finley's work or Diedrich Wolsack's work. Removing the energies that don't belong in the energetic system. And by energies, I mean all of the thoughts, all of the emotions, all of the physical energies that we might call aches and pains and tensions, and removing those energies so that there's easy, ready access to the direct awareness of this energy of life expressing through you. Dale Ellen Hoffman likes to quote St. Francis of Assisi, who says, and I paraphrase it when I say, when you start out, when you say you want to know God, when you say you want to go to heaven, when you say you want to get closer to the Almighty, you want to find yourself, you want to find God. When you do that and you set out on that journey, what you're looking for is actually what is looking through you. In some of his talks, Dale talks about how you are not breathing, you are not living your life, you are not seeing through your eyes, you are not doing things, you are being breathed, you are being lived. Life is acting through you. In truth, there is an energy, there is an intelligence, there is an awareness, a consciousness that keeps your heart beating and your breath moving when you're not paying any attention to it. It keeps your food digesting. There is a force of life that was your source, that is what gave rise to you when you were created, that goes beyond your ability to know it, just as it goes beyond your ability to understand when you were created and how. And getting the negative thoughts, the false negative beliefs, and by the way, every negative belief is false, getting them out of your system clears the space for you to see clearly and accurately who you are. And when you're in that space and you open your eyes and your perception is not distorted by the filters that are created by negative emotions, you see far more closely, you see far more accurately what's actually happening in the world around you. And when you do as Krishnamurti would suggest at times like that, and you ask to be shown in the moment what's yours to do. When you live in direct observation and direct response to what's there, and you don't have the distorting filters up of anger and fear and sadness and guilt and ego and trying to be this or that for somebody else's pleasure, and then what happens is life acts on you and you respond intelligently with an intelligence that goes beyond your conscious logical mind, and you're living in the moment in intelligence and in connection, and it's an energy field that just feeds. The giving and receiving happens in one breath, and it flows. And you don't need to ask yourself, how did I do? Did I do a good job? Did I do a bad job? You don't need to continually reevaluate the events of your life in the past, whether it was 2 moments ago or 20 years ago, because it'll be done. It'll be done in wholeness, in completeness. It will be a part of the flow of life. And you'll know without any doubt, without any questioning, that it's done and it was good, and that you participated as part of the flow of creation, and that that has blessed you and everyone else in that same moment. How does that happen? That happens pretty much automatically when we have removed enough of the false beliefs that generate the negative emotions which distort our perceptions. You know, there are countless stories about how the presence of negative emotional states have distorted people's perceptions and then had them doing things that when it's over and somebody says, oh my gosh, why did you do that? The person who did the action steps back and says, you know, I have any idea. I don't know why I did that. How could I do that thing? Well, because my perception was such that in the moment, my perception was creating and then showing me pictures that made that action on my part seem like a really good thing to do. Here's this idea that everybody is doing the best they can in each moment with whatever resources they have. Well, if I have negative emotions active in my mind and they distort my perception to the point where I think somebody is seriously attacking me and that I have a tremendous amount to lose, or that my family of origin, the people I love more than life itself, are in danger, I can be motivated to do some things that I would never do unless my perception was showing me, you know, life and death danger. So, one way to talk about the core of this work is for me to clear up anything that might distort my perception, anything that might lead me to think I'm in danger, when what we know at the deepest level of our awareness and existence is who we are can't be hurt. The essence of what we are is, the way of mastery's way of talking about it is, loved, loving, and lovable forever. And it can't, that, from that space of feeling the truth of my nature, I can't be motivated to do anything that's harmful to myself or anybody else. I love when Dale Ellen Hoffman talks about the original Aramaic word for whatever it got translated into Greek and then Latin and then English, but the word is faith. And he talks about how a valid definition for that word is the process of taking an action from the rooted center of my being. Well, the beginning is not taking the action. The beginning is getting in touch with the rooted center of my being. The beginning is getting a clear, direct, conscious awareness of my true nature, of this creative energy expressing in form, in, through, as, and around me. So you've got this idea that Michael Rice calls total, perfect, conscious, active, present love. And, you know, as I worked with that over the years, I came to realize, well, every one of us is always total, perfect, active, present love, because that's all there is. And yet, in any given moment, I may or may not be conscious of that. And if I'm not conscious of that essence, then I take an action and I'm not in faith. In other words, I haven't first gotten in touch with my true nature at the core, at the rooted center of my being, and then taken an action. I'm taking an action from anger or fear or sadness or hurt or the distorted perception that shows up in my mind because those energies are present. And then my mind shows me absolute rationalizations and reasons to do the very things that I swear I would never do, or I would never want anybody to do to me, and I don't think I would ever do to anybody else, but I end up doing them. Why? Because the pictures that show up in my mind, this process we call perception, is telling me this is the most important, reasonable, rational thing to do right now. So again, one of the core ways to talk about this work is for me to clean up any negative perception, any negative thought, any negative belief, and in the process, wipe the lens clean, or put the filter of Rachma in place, or put the filter of Rachma over intention and the filter of Kuba over perception. And when I've done that, my mind cannot show me something which would lead me to do something hurtful to myself or somebody else. It just can't do it because I have become aware. I have the clean lens, so I see my true nature, and I get consciously aware of the rooted center of my being, and then I take an action from that. And when that happens, my actions can only be those which affirm, extend, and amplify the positive, the loving, the creative. And that's what we're here to do. You know, one person might say, well, I'm here to, solve world hunger. And somebody else might say, well, I'm here to end wars. And somebody else might say, well, I'm here to be like Christ. And in essence, all of those things are accomplished when we remove the false perceptions, when we remove from the mind field, the field of energy that we call mind, as Michael Singer would talk about it, any of the roadblocks, any of the samskaras, any of the holding on, trying to stop the flow of life, or any of the pushing away, trying to reject the flow of life. When we do that work, our lives get better. When we do that work, we remove the possibility that we could speak or act in a way that directly wounds or creates upset for another person. And that's faith. That's getting in touch, consciously in touch with the rooted center of my being prior to taking an action. So area code Hello? 803, you're in the air. Who do we have?
This is Chris from South Carolina.
All right, there's some background noise. I could barely hear that. Who is this again, please?
This is Chris from South Carolina.
Chris from South Carolina?
Yeah.
How can I support you, sir?
Yeah, y'all doing readings today?
I'm sorry, that's not what we do on this show. What we do is talk about the ancient Aramaic process of forgiveness and tools to help improve our perception and life quality. We don't do psychic readings.
Okay, thanks.
All right, blessings. So we have 20 minutes left. As far as I'm concerned, that's plenty of a monologue. What's your comment or your question? How can we support you? Susan, welcome.
Hi, Dr. Tim. Hi, Dr. Tim. Sorry, I just got on. I didn't hear your monologue because I was in a session with a woman that I think you should interview, and she already said during the session that she would love to do an interview with you. She is sort of like Diederik Wolzak insofar as, because of her own life experience, she has created a kind of work that is so much like what you and Michael do, and yet it's almost as if she takes the patter part of it and has found a way to bore in with a client so that I've never seen anything like it. I had a session with her. It was a complimentary session because I won this. It's a long story. But anyway, I got a free session with her and thought, oh, my gosh, what will we talk about? Well, it was a Zoom session that was supposed to be an hour, and it went for almost an hour and a half. Not that she always does that, but her work is both similar to and different from in ways that I'm sure you would find very exciting. And I told her about your and Michael's work. I told her about the radio show. And I'm going to send you her contact material. Her name is Mira Rubin. And she's in my time zone. She lives only about an hour from our house here where we live. But she would love to interview with you and also give a demonstration session maybe over the radio show with someone who would be willing.
What's the spelling of her first name?
Mira. And her second name is Rubin. Just a really bright, interesting, creative person who I think you'd enjoy doing an interview with for Journey's Dream podcasts, and also have her maybe even do something on the radio show if you wanted to go in that direction. You and she would decide. But you're often asking about people, and I didn't know her well enough to know whether I would recommend her. But after one session with her, I can say she's really dynamite.
And is her website Core Connection, your Core Connection?
Yes, it is. Did
okay.
you know about her before?
No, I just looked it up. I was,
you know,
a big part of the monologue today was the Richard Rohr meditation that you sent me.
Oh, sorry, I missed it. I'll have to go listen.
So I appreciate that. Is there more you want
to
say about that, or just want to leave it that you'll make the introduction and we'll follow up from there?
Well, if you have her material, how would I make the introduction? Do you want to get in touch with her, or what should I do to make it facilitated?
Just send an email that copies both of us. I mean,
okay.
You somehow or another have the, you've got access to her because you had a session. So whether you want to, send an email that copies both of us, or you want to send the direct contact information. When I go to her website, it's a contact form, and I never know if those, get through very quickly.
And
as long as she knows it's not a cold call, that'll save a lot of energy. So.
Oh, yeah, it will. I know what you mean. Yeah. Sure. Okay, I can do that.
So I look forward to making that contact. I was letting people know at the beginning of the call, and I was going to mention it again near the end, so here we are. We've got 15 minutes left. That tomorrow I will do the Course in Miracles lesson and then introduce the interview, and I will play the interview that I did with Dr. Andrew Pleaner, who is an integrative psychiatrist with the same here, global.org. Network.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a good one. I did listen to that.
So, any thoughts, comments, questions about yesterday's show or today's show, what little you heard here at the end, or some other topic you want to turn us on to for the last 15 minutes?
No, I really don't, Dr. Tim. I'm sort of blitzed from the session I had with her. I think I'm in an altered state here.
Okay. Well,
so
if I were in a place like that, I would probably get off the phone and start making notes before I lost too much of the juice or the content of the session.
Right. That's a good idea. Yeah.
All right. Well,
yeah,
I look forward to getting that email from you, and I will follow up as quickly as I can, and I look forward to meeting her.
Okay, great, Dr. Tim. Thanks.
All right. Well, thank you for the input from Richard Rohr and this new lead. Blessings.
All right. Good. You too. Thanks.
So we have 14 minutes left. We have plenty of time to answer a question or take another suggestion about someone we might interview for the either the Journey Stream or the Mind Shifters Radio. We want to continue to explore ways to clear everything that's less than love from our energy system. And the good news is, once we do that, this thing that Michael Rice calls top cap, that's my initial for it, T-O-P-C-A-P, total, perfect, conscious, active, present love. And the good news is, I don't have to do anything to make that happen. It's already happening, except for the conscious part. All I have to do to be in direct connection to this total, perfect, active, present love, which is my existence, is get the roadblocks out of the way. Way of Mastery says that. Course in Miracles says that. You don't need to go searching for love. You don't need to build it. You don't need to create it. You are it. All you have to do is remove the obstacles to your vision, to your direct experience. All you have to do is identify and remove the false beliefs. How do we know they're false? They're negative. Any negative belief about yourself or the world around you is false. And once you remove what is false from your perceptual mechanism, we call it the mind, but it really is this, Michael Rice calls it, you know, the carbon-based memory. It's this computer-type hard drive thing in our heads that all it can do is record what's put in it and then play it back out. It's not your true self. It's not your mind. It's simply a record and playback device. And when it has recorded and downloaded upsets and fears and self-loathings and labels of yourself as less than, those, every time they're activated, will distort my perception. And my job is simply to clarify my perception. And once I clarify my perception, I see the world as it actually is, and there aren't any interfering filters between what actually is and my true self, then life acts on me and I respond to life, and the flow is beyond words positive, beyond words creative, connected, congruent, flowing. You know, we use these words trying to point in the direction of that experience, but it's beyond words, and it goes beyond words every new heartbeat. So, you know, the invitation with this work is pick up the tools and start using them, because that ability to see clearly your true essence and to live from that awareness is what most people would call enlightenment. It is available to everyone. And again, the whole boatload of tools is available at whyagain.org, whyagain.org. And if you go to that page and click on the Start Here link, upper left-hand corner, and then once you get to that page, just start scrolling down, and you'll see a whole list of worksheets that are free to print off and start using. And then if you've got questions or comments about them, give us a call. That's why we're here in the current format, 2 hours a day, 5 days a week. And there is a growing archive of shows. I think Michael has quoted something like, in the hourly totals, it's like over 3,000 hours now of recorded material. And to find your way through that, the best thing to do is to go to what Jeannie has curated out on that page as some of the highlight shows. I was introducing the reality management worksheet to somebody last week, and they came back for a session this week. And the way I introduce it is I do the five-step mental short version, and we talk about it and have them practice it for a week or two before we expand to the seven-step worksheet and the downloads off of Michael and Jeannie's website. And he came back and said, okay, this really looked great, but then what? What's the point of all this? And it was a pleasure to be able to say, I'm glad you asked that question. Go to this website, check out the archives, look for these highlight shows, and you'll be off and running. So, area code 760, you're in the air.
Hey, this is Ann in Florida. So I'm trying to process what you're talking about as far as coming from that place of love, which I believe, and I, you know, do the work. So I'm having trouble coming up with a goal. So I thought if I tell you what just happened, because I went offline because my daughter called, so I took the call while I was on, you know, this call. And so I'm trying to come up with the goal or the feeling that I can start the wake-up sheet with. So she's getting ready to go on the plane. She's already on the plane just waiting for it to take off for them to say, hey, you know, turn off your cell phones kind of thing. And she's flying out to Spokane where my son and his family live. So grandkids out there. She proceeds to tell me, well, do this, do this, do this. You know, have your phone on. You know, I'm going to get everybody together because their schedule is crazy and, you know, our schedule is. And I find myself come back with, without trying to be negative, there's that without, but saying, okay, you know, I do have some things that are going on in the next, you know, few days, and so I'll try my best. And so then she'll keep going and say, but Mom, you know, but that's more, they're more important. And I keep trying to, I guess, defend that. So I'm trying to figure out the feeling. I know it's frustration, but I guess. I don't know. What do you hear?
Well, I'm aware that if you're stuck trying to identify the feeling, you might go with the thought or the goal to get you in. What's the
right.
thought you
okay.
have
okay.
or what's the goal that you have? When your daughter is telling you, but Mom, these other people are more important, what thought comes to mind?
The thought comes, here she is telling me how to run my day. Or, yeah, I mean, because it's
so when your
happened.
Daughter tries to tell you how to run your day or what's most important in your life, what and you have that thought, she's trying to tell me how to run my life. What's the emotion?
I want her to stop it, so that's more the goal.
Yeah, right. But we'll have a more positively stated goal when you get there, but it's going to be resentment or anger.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's the resentment because it's like it starts to get inside my body. It starts to come up in my chest, and yeah, and then I have to sigh, and then it's like, oh, this is happening again. Perfect line for
okay.
Michael's
book.
What
happened before, and what was the goal before? In previous worksheets, when you've had this resentment because your daughter is trying to tell you what's right, what's wrong, how to run your life, what has your goal been? What's the positively stated goal?
Respect. Could you just respect what I'm doing, that I can take care of myself? Something like that.
Okay.
Like,
well, you can start with that. You can start with, I want her to respect me. I want her to honor my ability to choose my own actions.
Mm-hmm.
I want her to respect my ability to make good decisions for myself. Now, notice,
yeah.
as each one of those comes out and I cancel them, I will get a slightly different response, because there'll be slightly different energies, beliefs, thoughts, and emotions lodged in my mind from my past related to those slightly different versions of the goal. So you might want to do all three of them or four of them in goals in separate worksheets, just to see
right.
what is in your mind energy that's connected to these negative emotions around such a loving goal. I want my son or daughter, I want my friend, I want my sibling to trust that I am competent, that I can trust my own decision-making, that I'm competent to live my own life. That's a loving goal. Wow, how did I get so much negative emotion connected somewhere in me to that loving goal? So every time I change just, you know, even one word in that goal, it's going to go to a different part of my mind and perhaps reveal a different set of interactions from my past or a different set of traumas or a different negative belief I hold about myself.
Yeah, I think my area, and I'll re-listen to this because there's quite a few there. I think what I have been trying to do is like one of those pseudo solutions that Michael talks about, trying to figure it out, and I keep wanting, thinking that I'm going to go to the stepfather thing, you know, or something like that. And it's like, well, how do I know that if I don't do it, if I don't do the work, if I just keep running it around
and,
in my head?
And the answer, yeah, the answer is I won't ever know until I do the work.
So at least I identified that. I just keep rolling around. Okay, which is the whole theme, you know, of his work. Why does that keep happening to me again? Because I keep running around in my head trying to figure it out. Okay. Okay, perfect. Well, that was a good breath. Okay. I feel better just knowing that. Yeah, nothing like being confirmed that, yeah, you just keep doing the work. But, yeah, getting it on paper. Okay, I'll re-listen to those because they were all great, and a couple of them – the emotion was a little stronger than the other. So, okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, you're very welcome and deserving. Blessings. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tian. And I'll have to go back and listen to the meditation.
Well, it wasn't really meditation. It was Richard Rohr has a daily meditation newsletter. If you go to his, you know, Center for Contemplative whatever, I'll come up with here in a minute. His website is the Center for Action and Contemplation. Richard Rohr, R-O-H-R.
Okay.
And the daily meditation that was, you know, that they send out in email, Susan Bingham sent it to me. And so as part of the monologue today, I was going through it. And it's about the difference between trying to do something to get holy and having an experience of being whole.
Oh, that's good.
All right. Have a lovely show.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Thursday, September the 9th, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And so while we're waiting on Michael to dial in, I'll invite you to go to our website, which is whyagain.org. And you can press on the Start Here button or the scroll down. There's a bullseye in the center of the page. They both take you to the same place where there are all the worksheets. There's Michael's book. There's just lots and lots of information, audios, videos, archives. And just put the tools to work in your life and you'll see a change. Welcome, Michael. Hello, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. My phone decided it wasn't going to show me the screen to switch off my mute button. But I'm here, and I'm honored, and I'm delighted, and I'm really excited once again about getting to carry forward this conversation, to share these tools that fulfill a promise that was made 2,000 years ago by a genius healer named Yeshua when he said, I have a single purpose, and my purpose is to bring you life and bring it more abundantly. And when we recognize what life is and our definition for life in this particular body of work is that life is the movement or the flowing of love through a cell. Anything that inhibits that is going to lead to misery, suffering, pain, trauma, poverty, conflict, rage, war, all the insanity we see going on in our culture today. When we remove the blocks to that flow of active love through this carbon-based memory system, through this body-mind unit, as we call it, then what happens is people come to the point where instead of disturbance and upset and trauma, even in a circumstance where yesterday they would have had disturbance, upset, or trauma, they get to experience a state of internal connectedness to love, a state of peace, because they understand what life is. And so the whole idea of these tools is that they are life-enhancing. And we're here to enhance your life. And we're delighted that you're here to be part of the conversation. Do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room, sweetie?
No, it is all quiet. So I guess we go straight to the reading.
So I'm going to turn to page, 109 in the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And What You Can Do About It. We are all the way up to chapter 17 of 24 chapters. So we've got another 6 to go once we complete this one. And we're getting close to the completion of this chapter. And we're talking to this character, Richard, who's this recalcitrant kind of guy who really doesn't want to hear anything I have to say, is in total denial about any responsibility for his life, and every conversation is about how it's all somebody else's fault that he's in pain. Of course, you know, sooner or later, when you remind somebody often enough, you'll notice you've been through that painful reality 87 different times with 42 different people. Someday you got to go, I'm the one that was there every time. Maybe I'm involved in my life. Maybe it isn't everybody else. And so we're at the stage where we're looking at the fact that this so-called body has a function, and we call its function the mind, but really it's much more like a computer function. If I say, don't think about the color of your car, what resonates in your biocomputer, in your carbon-based memory system? But something about the color of your car. So it's a pure resonance function. There's no thinking. There's no actual mind involved in that, but we call that the mind. And what we're asking people to do, and what we're talking to Richard about, is looking inside of himself and recognizing that that's where the forgiveness process has to occur. The core of this work is first century Aramaic forgiveness, where the word forgive has nothing to do with, I'm going to let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me. That's a Greek idea of pardoning. Nice thing, but it's not forgiveness. If you do pardoning and you call it forgiveness, then you'll never do the forgiveness work, and misery will tend to continue in your life. If you want to be free of misery, you've got to free your body's mind, your carbon-based memory system. The storage system for that information is your cellular structure. When you store qualities of energy that are of a disintegrative nature within your structure yells and screams, ouch, hurt, this is painful. Why are you doing this to me again? And of course, most everyone goes into total denial at that point and says, I'm not doing it. It's all Bill's fault. It's all Harry's fault. It's all Hortense's fault. And so everybody, virtually everybody on the planet lives in a space where they've always got somebody to talk about and they've always got somebody else to blame for what's going on inside themselves. And we're inviting Richard to step inside his own door, inside his own mind, and experience something different. So we've been addressing issues of projection, of sexuality, of what we call the file folder effect, and how when you resonate one set of files in a mind, anything that's been linked to those files in the past is going to tend to move at the same time. If you remember when we started this chapter, the example used of was I offered the thought, you know, the Lone Ranger's horse's name? And whenever I ask that question of an audience, I usually get Tonto, Trigger, and Silver. Of course, Silver is the horse's name. But if in the file, so to speak, on someone's mind, Tonto is near the surface or Trigger is near the surface, then bingo, those brain cells fire, and that becomes the answer to the question. And most people live in that world of whatever's resonating in their mind is the answer to the question, and the truth they believe in, no matter how false, no matter how much of a lie it is, if that's what's on the surface of the mind, then our languaging tends to move in the direction of that blame game and it being someone else's fault. So I offered Richard the thought. The issues we've been speaking of are in the root of the abuse we do and the abuse we experience in our relationships, our families, our communities, and our world. They are the source of the confusion that leads people to act, to acts of violence, divorce, hatred, vengeance, crime, and war. We must change these dynamics in ourselves if we are to thrive, which is what we are designed to do. Richard said, wait a minute, Michael, you lost me. I don't even know what you're talking about. How do you get to change the dynamics that are so deeply ingrained? Forgiveness. This tool of healing allows us to remove distorted realities from our minds. I'm talking about dealing with all the realities we've accepted that lead to confusion. So many people have bought into the sex is dirty, save it for the one you love, and other insane lines of thinking that relationship and family seem doomed in our culture. True forgiveness of all painful realities is where our healing lies. If we refuse to do our healing work, we can be easily manipulated and controlled by anyone who knows how to push our buttons and resonate unconsciousness. I'm referring, Rhea Richard, to the skill, the basic skill of removing realities that do not serve us. And at the risk of sounding patronizing, the overwhelming feeling you have is exactly my point. We've resonated all those realities inside of you during our conversation today. Notice it is a beautiful autumn day, and we're safe and secure on our deck here in the Ozarks. And character Richard's visiting me in the book at our teaching center called Heartland. We even have clean air to breathe. That was one of the reasons for selecting that particular piece of property, is because that location in southern Missouri is the top 10% clean air in the nation. So we even have clean air to breathe, and the only difference between the beginning of our conversation and now is the realities that have been resonated in your mind. Notice nothing has changed in the world. The only thing different is what has been stirred up in your mind. You are in overwhelm only because of that. That is the beginning. And then realizing that is the beginning of some deep processing, which you will probably continue for months to come. A little overwhelm is to be expected. Okay, I can accept that, but I don't understand what's happening. Why all the confusion? And so we're going to let the conversation sit at that. And tomorrow we'll get into, or pardon me, on Monday, we'll get into the confusion aspect of how the mind operates and generates its confusion. But just recognizing here, you know, to me the whole point of these couple of chapters is just to recognize that if I'm in pain, there's something moving in me that is not designed to be moving in me. It's not even designed to be in me. And until I'm willing to use the tools to address and remove those things, I'm going to get to experience it. And if I look back, I'll probably find, you know, if I were to be able to look back one generation of my bloodline, look at mom and dad, I'd probably find the same kinds of confusion and overwhelm in one or both of them. If I were to look at the next generation back, moms and dads, and be looking at four lives, I'd probably find that same overwhelming confusion. If I went back to the previous generation, eight lives, I'd find it. The previous 16 lives, 32, 64, 128, 256. Guess what you get to when you get to 32 generations or 30 generations in your bloodline? You've got over 1.6 billion people. And yes, these energetic patterns are passed down through our genetic structure into our physiology, and then what we call the mind of physiology, the body's mind, the body has a mind of its own. When those things are resonating into activity, they come into play. So, you know, here Richard sat down on my deck and, you know, just a few hours ago, started a conversation. He's in a very peaceful place. He's just left a divorce behind, you know, using the geographic here, and he's in a pretty happy place. But as soon as the conversation starts and things that he's able to keep suppressed start to move, he's in pain, he's in turmoil, he's in trauma, because he carries it with him. You know, I'll often, you know, one of my favorite tongue-in-cheek lines is, how many have ever taken the geographic cure? And you find that when you get to the other end, you get off the plane, the person who picks you up at the airport finishes the sentence the person who dropped you off started. How do they know what to say to you? Because energetically, we are always transmitting the results of the energetic patterns that we hold in us. And those literally, on a physics level, become attractive fields that draw people in to do the behaviors that match what's held in our minds. And that's all part of a conspiracy. You know, we're hearing a lot about conspiracy theories these days. This is all part of a conspiracy. And here's my offering. The way the world is set up is in a deep, deep, deep conspiracy to heal you. In other words, life is designed so that through resonance, everything you've never dealt with in your life, somebody's going to show up and bring it up for you. And when they do, you'll do one of two things. You'll play the denial game and you'll say, well, this has nothing to do with me. It's all your fault. And you'll project the whole conversation. And your brain will literally generate for you a perceptual construct that shows you that it's their fault. It's a lie, but that's what the mind does. The mind produces evidence that you ask it to produce. So when you say, show me that they're the problem in my life, the mind goes, oh, so you've been through this 87 different times with 42 different people, but you don't want me to show you any of that evidence that shows you that it's about you. You want me to really make a convincing story or case for it's all their fault. Okay, I can do that. And the evidential mind will do exactly that. When do we wake up from it? When do we address those energetic patterns that literally are at the root of our financial, our relationship, our physical, our emotional, and our mental diseases? And we live in a culture that says, I'll give you a pill and I'll get rid of your mental disease. Well, I'll also get rid of your mind if I give you that pill, because what that's going to do is shut down some function in your structure, which is always going to lead to more disease processes. But, you know, I temporarily feel better, so hey, let's go for it. Well, we're offering, if you're taking that approach, you know, that can be really helpful. And it can end a lot of suffering, or at least, what should I say, ameliorate a lot of suffering. But in the end result, sooner or later, you've got to deal with it. And so we're suggesting that you take these tools, lay them alongside your treatment regimen, put them to work, and watch how life changes. So that's what we're here to support. And we're delighted that you're here with your listening ears, and we would love to hear your sweet voice. What's on your mind? How can we support you? Our calling number, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, 563-999-3581, you will be listening to the show. And then when you have a question, all you do is push 1, and we'll be having a conversation. So do we have anybody out there, Miss Jeannie, who has a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, we do not. So someone press 1. Come on. This show is to support you, not to do monologues. We have a hand go up. Area code 610, I believe it's Susan.
Hello, Jeannie. Hello, Michael.
Welcome, young lady. Good to hear your voice.
Thanks. I have a couple of very practical questions. Jeannie, I went on to Silly Company to look for the CBD oil, and there are so many options that I have to ask you, what one you recommend?
There's two that I use. There's one that is called Relief, and it's for pain. Uh-huh. The other one mm-hmm. is Sleep.
I like that one.
Okay. Yeah. Good. And you just spray like 8 or 9 sprays in your mouth and hold it for a little bit and then swallow.
Uh-huh. Okay. Great.
We do the Sleep and the Relief, those two.
Great. Second question.
Uh-huh.
You mentioned a COVID drug that I hadn't heard of the other day. Is that the one that they use for horses but in a human dose?
Michael, you can answer that one better than I can.
Ivermectin, there are a couple things that I mentioned. Yeah, there are a couple of things that we've mentioned, and one of them is we have one friend who's a dentist, actually, who was symptomatic and got tested and found that they had COVID, and they went immediately to the hospital and had an infusion, an IV, of monoclonal antibodies. And she said that within 15 minutes of them starting the infusion, she felt better, and within about 36 hours, her symptoms were totally gone, and she was back to full energy, and her sheer energy had been just flagging and dropping into the ground within 12 or 14 hours of becoming symptomatic. So that's one, and the other one that's out there, and there's a lot of research been done around the world. Excuse me, go ahead.
Monocloidal. Colloidal.
I believe LOID, I'm not sure. Monoclonal.
Okay.
It's MONOCLONAL.
Yeah, clonal. Monoclonal.
Do that again, Jeannie.
MONOCLONAL.
Okay, thank you.
Monoclonal.
Sorry, Michael. Didn't want to get that too far gone before you went on to something else.
Sure. And the other one that I talked about is ivermectin, which is used as a dewormer in horses and especially in a lot of states where there are a lot of farm stores. People have been going into the farm stores and buying horse dosages of ivermectin, as though they were deworming their horse and taking it personally. Getting themselves into a lot of trouble with toxicity, actually. Apparently in some cities and states, the the number of calls to poison control around this use of ivermectin has been outrageous. And then there is human use ivermectin, which has been used for decades for several different disorders as a drug. And there's quite a bit of research that's saying that the human dosages used properly, used early, is producing some pretty powerful healing results, you know, giving people time for their bodies to recover and heal. And I think I've got some research on that. If you'd like, I'll send you a link.
Sure, that would be great. And also, there was another hydrochloroquine. I heard that...
Hydrochloroquine.
Yeah. Interesting. So do you know anything about that?
I know one man who was in Vietnam and is a Vietnam vet, and he's actually a healthcare worker, and he had used the hydrochloroquine. Pardon me, I may be mistaken. Yeah, no, it was hydrochloroquine several times when he was in Vietnam, you know, parasites and all those sorts of things, and used it successfully. It can create some pretty powerful side effects, but he used it successfully. And so when he got COVID, he insisted that his healthcare provider give him the hydrochloroquine, which they did. And he had been hospitalized, and within 2 days he was out of the hospital and didn't need intubation or any of that. So, you know, in the right hands for someone who knows how to use it, I think there's some pretty good research that says that both can be useful, again, in the right hands, properly utilized. And there's a lot of misuse. There's some research out there where they used, you know, like ridiculous doses and said, well, this doesn't work because our ridiculous dose, you know, it failed.
But
there's also some research that in the right hands, both of those substances. Now, one of the problems with them is they're cheap. You know, they're just cheap. You can't charge thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. So they're not exactly the average healthcare worker's treatment of choice. But that's my understanding. That's my take on it at this moment.
Okay, thanks. Helpful. Yeah, I thought I had, I just couldn't remember one of those drugs. It was the ivermectin that you had mentioned that I didn't write down. Okay.
Right.
Great.
So what else is exciting in your world?
Well, I have a sort of a weird question. Everything's exciting in the world. It's good. I have a friend who she's a healer and a psychotherapist and so forth, and I've sometimes talked about her because she often says things that I don't find helpful. One of them being that she'll tell me that I have entities around me that are not helpful, or that alien forces from other planets are attacking me, or I have demons and so forth. And I think, well, I don't know what to do with that, and I certainly don't want to think that I have those. So I just distance myself from that. But she also confers with a man she called a spirit man who is no longer in the body, who she calls grandfather, who is a shaman. And I've been thinking about my middle grandson, my daughter's middle boy, who is extremely talented actor, singer, dancer. Great when he's on the stage and great when he is in his sort of, it's like two personalities. When he is not in his outgoing, sociable personality, it's almost as if he's unconscious. He'll do things that are, that appear to be self-centered, but I don't think it's self-centered. I don't think he's aware. And I'm not sure if I mentioned this on the radio show. I have an example of this. I was helping him pack his car. His car was across a small lawn that you could walk around, and we had just seeded the lawn. So I asked him, would you kindly go around the lawn? I don't want anybody tromping on those little blades of grass. He ignored me. He kept taking his boxes and walking tromp, tromp, tromp in his boots right across the lawn. And after saying what I should have done is moved his car, didn't even occur to me. What I should have said, I kept saying, Jacob, please don't walk on the lawn. Jonathan and Charlie and I spent a long time seeding that lawn. He ignored me, and he must have walked across it 10 times. Then we were finished packing, and I was just astounded. One of the reasons I didn't say anything to him is because I couldn't believe what he was doing. I lost my brain. Well, a few days later, I drove 2.5 hours with the rest of his stuff, because not everything fit in the car by a long shot. I drove 2.5 hours toward Pittsburgh and met him halfway from Pittsburgh to transfer all the rest of his stuff into his car. And I said, Jacob, I have to say something. I said, I just felt so disrespected when you kept walking across the lawn. I thought about responsible communication. How do I say this? What was going on? And he said, oh, I didn't mean to disrespect you. I was hyper-focused. And I thought, what kind of an answer is that? I still don't know what to do with that, except to think that he, and this is where the shaman comes in. My friend told me that Jacob is actually, his soul is split apart from himself. Now, Michael, I don't even know what to do with stuff like this. But if there's any help from him, for him on this level, then I want to help. I want to, you know, I want my, she, my friend said, if you want to hire me, she charges for these things, she'll meditate on him and knit his souls back together. Michael, I don't know what to do with this stuff. So I'd love to hear your take.
Well, my first thought would be, you know, that you might want to pick up the lesson of, especially if there's someone who's hyper-focused and has difficulty shifting their minds, you might want to look at how you give instructions out of resistance. And as you speak about, don't walk across the lawn, for a mind that's singularly focused and or hyper-focused, as he refers to it as, walking across the lawn is the only option in that conversation. When you offer a clear directive, here's what I want you to do, you might find that there's a better ability to hear and a more cooperative response. You know, the world teaches us about what we don't want. And I know, like, for instance, with our granddaughter, you know, there are things that, like every kid does, that they don't have the brain cells for how our culture works or what's acceptable and what's not. And I know that I have to constantly be monitoring my own mind and my own language so that when one of those things occurs, I can talk to her about what we do in this culture, what our way of doing things is rather than that. And
yeah.
I find that as I do that, I get more and more cooperation for, of course, I want to do what our culture does. So that might be one thought. And the other one, you know, I don't know what to do with all of that soul splitting and what have you. The whole demon thing, the, you know, monsters and all of that that appear in the mind, I would offer that what that is our minds habitually generate perceptual constructs in accord with what our beliefs are. So if somebody told us that, you know, if we're doing something bad, there's an evil influence and there's a demon controlling us, then whatever the mind energy is in the mind around that behavior, the mind's going to generate a demon. It's going to generate an image and personalize that mind energy. But when we pierce that veil, all those images are that come to the mind and look so very real, all of those constructs are nothing but the personalizing and projection of the mind energy into, you know, somebody else to blame, whether it's a demon or the devil or, you know, the devil made me do it, et cetera, et cetera. For me, the quickest route is building the brain cells to become aware of the mind energy behind what my mind serves up as a perceptual construct that I call a demon, rather than getting lost in demonology and what powers does this demon have and how can it control me and what can I, is to start to look at the underlying mind energy and clean it up. And, you know, if you've exhausted every other resource, if, you know, if it's in your financial realm, you know, give this woman a shot and see what she comes up with. You know, she might just happen to be able to tap into an energy that will help open this young man's mind.
Does that make
sense?
I almost don't know how to. Yes, it does make sense. Can you? I guess I have. I want to be open, but I don't want to be gullible. So your idea of taking her up on it, I mean, she's trying to make a living and so forth and so on and see if it helps. But I have two thoughts. One thought is if she removes these demons or re-knits together the soul, the fractured soul of this grandson, is he not? He's getting off, he's not doing his own work. He's just having it done to him. And I've always thought that we need to do the work.
I was going to ask the same question.
Thank you, Jeannie. Okay.
Definitely, ultimately, having one do the work that needs to be done is what's going to, you know, doing one's work is skill building. It builds those other levels of strength and power. That, yeah, just walking in. I remember a course I did way back 30 years ago, and in the course they were like, and now we can heal everybody, and so everybody tomorrow bring in a name of somebody that's sick, and then we'll turn it over to the group, and the group will heal them. It's like, that's when I left the course. Thank you very much. I don't have any business in somebody else's field moving things around. I don't know. Maybe they're right on – it may look traumatic to us, but maybe they're right on the cusp of the – of the moment of their lives where they're going to make their opening and do their healing. And I'm going to walk in and steal it from them. Thank you very much. I'll pass. So there's certainly that aspect of it as well.
Yeah. Well, and you helped me realize that if this woman did a healing on Jacob to the point where something moved, no matter how, then perhaps he would become capable of doing his own work. Whereas now, I mean, this woman, when I told her about Jacob and what he had done, she said that's a kind of narcissism. And I thought, I don't want to put that word on it. It is a kind of self-reference. He had no reference outside of himself. I was hyper-focused, therefore I did that. The fact that he could even say that means that he was aware that he was ignoring me or hyper-focused. He might have felt, oh, she's asking me to do something that's impossible, but there was no acknowledgement on his part afterward when I was talking to him that he bore any responsibility or felt any regret about what he had done. He just excused himself, which is something that narcissists do. And this same boy has asked me, because his father is very narcissistic, and I know it's bad to give labels, but there it is. He said, do you think I'm a narcissist? And I said, right off the top of my head, I have no sense that you're a narcissist. I think you've been hurt by one. You may even be copying the behavior of one. But I don't think that's you, Jacob. And I'm glad I said that to him, and I'm not going to take that back and say, oh, now you're acting like a narcissist. But I am totally bamboozled by the fact that there was no regret, no acknowledgement, no question about, geez, I'm sorry about the lawn, how's it doing, or anything like that. He was entirely inside his own self.
You know how you've talked about the therapist with the grandson that's OCD, and the therapist says you just don't participate. That's one of the basic instructions. My offering would be in this circumstance that you simply step in, and where the behavior is that far off, you simply don't allow it. You know, that would be the place for accountability. And the sooner he's held accountable, the sooner there's going to be the possibility of a shift. And accountability in that space might look like, here, I'm going to walk behind you, and we're going to walk the path that you're going to use to take these boxes to your car, and this is what you're going to do. And or I'm going to walk you out to the car, and you're going to put the keys in the ignition, and you're going to move the car to the end of the pathway. I'm going to protect my lawn. If you choose to violate that protection, then I'm going to do something about it. So probably nobody in his life has ever held him accountable for these behaviors, so they go on with no idea that there's anything off base because he's gotten away with it all his life. So that might be the space for stepping forward and taking a directive role where his direction is so far off base.
That's so weird, because in his life, if he did anything 1 degree to the left or 1 degree to the right of what his father wanted him to do, he was punished to the point where he became a recluse, even as a little boy. He lived in his room, period. His whole life was in his bedroom. That's how he coped. Meanwhile, his older brother, Luke, put up his dukes and fought with his dad to the point where Lukey was very badly hurt over and over again. One boy chose one way, one boy chose the other way. So I don't understand how that fits, except that suddenly Jacob was acting just like his dad, maybe, and ignoring everybody and putting himself first. Oh, Michael, I'm just puzzling over the whole thing.
Well, for me at this point, the difference between what I just suggested and what happened to him all his life is, all his life, nobody ever demonstrated to him what they wanted done. According to what you just said, what they simply did was pull out the punishment rag and figured that would be enough. My input is that you interrupt the process of his ill-conceived behavior and you redirect it. So you're redirecting behavior consciously, purposely, out of love, and supporting him in coming out of that shell, or, you know, the excuse he uses. And I think that's, you know, to some degree, it sounds like it's just another form of denial, another way of not being responsible. But in the moment, not punishing him, but insisting on responsibility.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
For me, that would be the difference.
Yeah, well, that's good. And I know his mother does that now that the mother is by herself. She has done her very best to guide and coax and assist and redirect Jacob without any punishment, because punishment was just done all the time. And his reaction is, I'm so sick of these persnickety controlling people in my life, these over-anxious people who are demanding too much of me. Why do you care about a neat house? I mean, you know, so this is a big challenge. So, yeah, to be the right kind of loving person. Big assignment.
Yeah, and to stand up for your rights. You know, he's talking about his rights. I have a right to take care of this lawn that I put so much time and energy into, and you're a threat to it, and I'm just not going to allow it. That's all. You're just not going to do it.
Well, Dr. Tim laughed. He said, you moved that car into the shade. It was a blistering day, and we were loading the car in the sun, and I said, let's move the car to the shade. But in order to move it to the shade, we had to go around a little lawn to get to the car. Dr. Tim said, well, you moved the car. Why didn't you just move it again? Duh, it never occurred to me, Michael, to just move the car. Of course, that doesn't do anything for the discipline thing that you're talking about or the consciousness element of what you're talking about, but it would have gotten rid of the problem. Yeah.
Well, you'll remember in the intensive we covered responsibility communication. And in the responsibility communication rules, the last step is problem solving. The non-being mind, the first step it wants to do is solve the problem. And what I would offer is you've probably got a young man who never in his life had anyone who taught him how to solve a problem or directed him in a way that helped him solve a problem. It sounds like, well, what we do if you step out of line, and we're not going to bother explaining to you what in line means, just if you step out of line, we're going to punish you. And that isn't, there's no healing possible in that. What I'm talking about is a healing accountability done from a space of connectedness and love. And it sounds like that's what that young man needs, is someone who can hold him accountable lovingly, instead of punishing him, support him in doing behaviors that are in harmony. You know, it's like kind of with Arya, as the three-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sweetie, I understand that that's what you want to do right now. But in this, like, you know, she's got a different set of rules in her parents' household compared to our household. And sometimes in her parents' household, she's allowed to throw a tantrum and, you know, there's upset and all that stuff that goes on. But I can remember one day we're getting ready to go outside and she decided she wanted a certain way. And tantrum started, and I just said, sweetie, you know, we cherish you. And, you know, in this house, we just don't do tantrums. We cooperate with each other. We care for each other, and we cooperate. And, I mean, literally, mid-teardrop and snot out of nose starting of tantrum, it stopped, and she said, okay. And we walked out the door happily, and, you know. But people don't have the brain cells for what the alternative is. What would the average person do with that touch? Don't you dare do that sort of thing. If you do that, because they've never resolved the tantrum inside themselves.
Wow, that's so interesting. Yeah. That's helpful, Michael. Tim and I are this young man has just turned 21. And when Lucy turned 21, he was in line to receive an inheritance from Tim's mother. She had set up these trusts or something. When Luke turned 21, he wanted his trust money. The trust money's gone. He spent it on pot, drink, and he basically flunked out of 2 semesters of school. And he, thank goodness, was helping pay with some of that trust money, helping pay for his schooling. So he even squandered his own money on that. Now he's got a job. He says he likes the job. He's passing his courses, but he's lost his money. So when we talk to Jacob, who has a similar inheritance coming to him, Tim Bingham said to him, how about look at what happened with Luke? Now, I know you're a very different person, and it's up to you. You choose whether you want to keep this, have this money now, or whether we should keep it until age 25. Without batting an eye, Jacob said, oh, you better keep it. Why don't you keep it? So Tim said, here, I'll make you a deal. We've been giving him an allowance, and we're going to continue, I think, but this is where the question comes. We know he's smoking pot, or not smoking, vaping it or something. He has a medical marijuana card, and he probably overindulges, but he's more conscientious. He doesn't want to hurt his voice, for instance, and he doesn't want to hurt his brain, but he has anxiety, which is eased by taking this. When he was living with us, he left his room in a terrible mess, and then when he left, I cleaned up all the garbage, and it included a lot of vials of God knows what it was, lots of vape remaining things, and nicotine gum. So I knew he was doing some things to medicate himself. So Tim said, look, we're going to give you a small chunk of that money to start you off, but that will be your money. And for the time being, for your own use, for your equipment, whatever you want, maybe food, whatever you want to spend it on, but you are now going to be responsible for this small amount of money. not small, but $10,000. He said, I'm going to let you handle this $10,000. And then Tim and I talked about, well, maybe we should stop his allowance. And then I thought maybe that would feel like a punishment. So we're continuing an allowance, knowing that we're probably enabling him. And I, once again, we're just looking at what's going on and not knowing what to do, not knowing what to do.
Well, perhaps languaging that he's going to get this money amortized over a certain period, and it's going to be in the place of his allowance. So it's not taking his allowance away, but he's getting this as a way of receiving his allowance and seeing how responsible he's going to be, you know. And, you know, if it's $10,000, here you handed it. So for 2 years, that's to take the place of your allowance. And in 2 years, if you need it, your allowance will restart. But right now, here's the 10 grand. Let's see how you handle it.
That's a great idea. That really is a great idea.
So it's
idea.
Not taking it away. He's stepping into responsibility, and it opens a bigger space for him to learn to manage himself and manage his life. And, of course, you know, handing him the tools so that self-medication isn't a requirement for him would be pretty awesome. And, you know.
Say that again, Michael.
The level of,
did you just say? I didn't.
I say the preferred method for me of helping him to manage his life would be to hand him some tools to really start to explain, you know, there's no safe level of use of nicotine or caffeine or pot. You know, I mean, the half-life of pot is somewhere between 8 days and 8 months. I don't know that anybody knows exactly what that half-life is, which means that the deadening effect on brain cells is there for at least 8 days after it's imbibed. You know, you are damaging your brain, period. That's just the way it is. So instead of damaging yourself in order to anesthetize, you know, explain the difference between an anesthetic and healing, are you interested in healing? Then if you're interested in healing, there's a way to do that so that the anesthetic use is just not required. You can free yourself from that.
Yeah, that's ideal. That would be ideal. I don't know if he'd be open to that, but certainly we could put it to him.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if you were listening to yesterday's show, but we were talking about the codependence workshop as a self-study that's now set up. And very likely, if he's doing college, I don't know what all he's studying, but he could very likely get credit for doing some of that work. So it would benefit his resume and his college studies, and he'd be acquiring some skills for working through those things. Might be something to put forward to him. Say, you know, here's something you can likely get college credit for, and it's going to give you relief from that stress and strain that you hold that keeps you on the treadmill of drugs. No, I think a little, sure, please, Jeannie, do, but one more thought. Just, you know, you might make a list of everything you cleaned up in his room, like the caffeinated gum, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, or the nicotine gum, and document for him. These are things, ultimately, that, son, are going to destroy your body. It's just the way it is. So if you'd like to recoup from that, we have some tools. And by the way, it could become a college credit, and it's to be self-study, and I'd be there, you know, happy to help you with the study. And, you know, you've got all the links. You can help him and work with it, and who knows? He might be ready for that. Jeannie, you have a thought?
Wow, that would be so exciting.
I was just going to say, the way that if you check any, just about any college has what prior life experiences or prior life assessment. And what you do, you have to have a certificate that you completed whatever program it is. But like I was even able, besides the Why Again and the Healing Through Relationships and all that, and I had to write up a description of what each one covered and how it was comparative to a college course. And then I had to look in their college catalog, you know, and pick out one that, okay, this is on communication, and they have a communication course, so this is comparative to that. And I had to submit my explanation as well as my certificate of completion, and then they determined how many credits that it was worth. Some of the courses they said was worth 2 or 3 credits, some was worth 5 credits, and it depended on how many hours I had put into it. But it's called prior life assessment. They even do that for if you've taken, like at the, you know, high school, you took a computer course at night or something like that, then it's comparative to a computer course that they give at the college, and they get credit for it, that they've already taken it. And so they can knock out a whole lot of their electives by doing that.
That is really interesting.
And heal at the same time.
Right.
Prior life, I'm writing it down now.
Prior life assessment, PLA. That's usually what they call it. And
okay.
They look at, you know, you look at anything that you have taken a course on and gotten a credit for. I mean, like I even took sign language years ago at my church, and I submitted it and got credit for a foreign language.
Woo!
And so anything that you have taken, you know, done in your life, and you have to have a certificate showing that you completed it. And
yeah,
but you know, so all of the courses, all
idea.
Of the Why Again intensives that we have done, I got credits for them.
And we would certainly
wow.
support you in him getting certificates if that's
Absolutely.
The direction he chose to go.
Wow, that's a great idea. Is the schedule for the how does the codependence arrangement work now? You're not running it. People can just pay for it and watch the videos.
It's a self study.
Yeah.
There are right now 89 hours of video. We're going to do one more program one of these days, so that it's around 90 hour, an even 90 hours. Of course material and the worksheets and you know the food program for Heartland from Heartland, all of that's included in it, and the cost of it $600. And then we have not at this point set up a mechanism for someone showing to us that they've completed it, but if he wants to do it, I'd be happy to work with it and set something up so that we have verification, and then we offer him certification of completion.
The food thing would be a complete turnoff for him, so that's not required. That part of it is offered, but
it's not
required.
It's just
right?
there, right.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's just
okay.
part of the package.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, the next time he visits, I'm not in touch with him. He is not a communicator, and he's busy and so forth. But if and when he comes to stay with us, if we get a nice opening, a nice, gentle, good connection, I could put this to him. And I know he's interested in psychology. He even mentioned that he might major in psychology. But I have to say, Michael, he also has a very dark, negative feeling about his own life. If I said, well, this would make you, you know, so you could live till 65 or 75 or 85 or 95, he'd say, why would I want to do that? He makes comments like that, which show me that he's really, I don't know what it is, depressed or down on himself, or I don't know, just being dramatic. I don't know what it means. Anyway, there's that factor in there, too, of why should I bother? I'm not worth it. I'm just trying to get through life.
Just another reality in the mind.
Yeah.
So I'm sending you a link to a 1 minute, I think it's an hour and 4 minutes, why is this happening to me again synopsis. And
okay.
I just texted it to you. I would suggest you forward that link to him. It's a pretty compact package, you know, take an hour and listen. And it just lays the whole thing out in a way that anyone with an interest, I would think, in psychology and any sort of inclination to healing themselves would go, Well, this makes sense. I'm up for it. So maybe give that a listen. It's actually the second session in the Codependence Intensive. But I just sent you a link to the video. So it stands stands alone. Jeannie's edited it out. And that might be something to send to him to start a conversation.
Great. Thank you. Wonderful ideas. Yeah.
Well, you know, we're all in this together, and it's time for healing on the planet. So I'm delighted that you've opened the conversation, because I'm sure that there are lots of people listening who have that recalcitrant person in their lives, or they are that recalcitrant person, and this conversation helps to build the brain cells for, oh, I could inspire something different, or I could do something different. And, you know, the when the mind can produce a construct of possibility, that changes everything. And for most people, you know, the mountains they don't climb look like they're impossible.
And yeah, so true.
Building the brain cells for a different construct has the potential to change everything, and that's what we're here to do, is to change everything. As we nurture the muscles in our backs and our arms and our legs after having shoveled 4,000 pounds of compost into our new garden spaces.
Oh, that
was fun. We actually, it was a good workout.
You pulled a fast one on Jeannie. You pulled a fast one on Jeannie. She was hosting by herself.
Well, I was there listening. That's what I did. I got about a third of it done, or a quarter of it done, and then we took it up to our other. We've got a new garden space that's about 15 by 15, and it now has about a foot of compost in it. And we both shoveled that one and lamented our muscular excursion. And you know, it was good exercise. It was a good workout. And I'm actually looking out the window at it right now, and it's just absolutely beautiful. This dark black soil that's in on top of this clay ground that we've got here, and we're actually tomorrow we'll be sowing some seeds in it for a first cover crop to get it really rocking and moving.
Nice.
Yeah, it is nice.
Good for you. Have to hand it to you. Shoveling is not easy.
Well, it definitely was a workout. It's a different set of muscles than either of us usually use, especially when you pick the shovel up and turn it. And then we went out and got 100, I don't know, I guess these rocks are probably, what, 20 pounds each, Jeannie? But 100 of these cast rocks to go around the edge of it to create a perimeter. So that was the next one. So we got a finger workout and back workout, hauling those and putting them in place. So we've been busy, and this afternoon we're going to treat ourselves to a movie and relax and take it easy.
What movie?
There's one, you know, I don't remember what the title of it was. I just saw it was something like Introducing Me to the Father. It's a special one-time thing that's being shown at and it's about relationships with fathers. So I'll let you know tomorrow.
Show Me the Father.
Show Me the Father. And apparently it's about a young man who with challenges with dad. And yeah, we'll do it.
Good. Maybe Tim Bingham ought to watch that.
There you go. Any movement on your thinking? Oh, we're down to the last minute, so I guess I'll let go of that question. And the next time we talk.
In the meantime, everybody?
No? Okay. Well, we'll hold the space. Blessings.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org
That's www.whyagain.org.